All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the start of, I guess we would call it season two of the Par None podcast. It has been a while. We haven't been on since early April. No real reason except that, you know, my usual co-host PGR and I have just been extraordinarily busy. We're both married. We both have multiple kids running around. They're all off of school at the same time. So it's just really, really hard to coordinate schedules from people that live in different states at different times, trying to make things work. And unfortunately, sometimes podcasting just gets pushed to the side. So that's where I've been. You'll notice we have a guest host or a guest, or I don't even know what we call Brady, but this is my buddy Brady. He's going to be with us today. PGR is not with us to start the season. He is not gone. He is just, again, incredibly busy trying to figure out how his schedule can fit back into this. So he is not gone. He is just not here tonight, this week, for this episode. And we'll see what kind of where we go from here. So Brady is a good buddy of mine. He works with me at Curated. So we've known each other, I think, since last February, March, like 2022. So just over a year. Brady, tell us, you're in Minnesota, correct?
Yep, St. Paul, Minnesota.
Perfect. So St. Paul, are you from there originally?
I grew up in Minnesota, but in a small town in southern Minnesota. So after college, moved up to the cities.
Gotcha. But went to college at Arizona State.
Yep.
Yes. Yep. And then do you split your time between Minnesota and Idaho, or is that not? Am I remembering that wrong?
No. Right now we. When work from home is flexible, we are able to go out to Idaho for about a month at a time, a couple, two, three times a year. So lucky enough to spend some time out there too.
So was raised in one of like the least golf friendly states when it comes to weather, moved to maybe the most popular golf state for weather, and now split your time between two very unpopular golf states weather-wise. Makes sense.
Yeah, very short season here in Minnesota. So that was the main reason for going to Arizona.
Perfect. That's awesome. Have you always been into golf? Has golf always been something for you since you were little, or is this something you took up later, or where does golf kind of enter the picture for you?
Yeah, I pretty much had a golf club in my hand as soon as I could walk. I grew up golfing. We lived about a block away from the golf course, and we would go just drive over almost daily and play at least a few holes. But I was pretty much there all the time growing up. So golf is in my family, in my blood. Absolutely love it.
That's awesome. Was your dad like, or anybody in your family, like, did they work in the golf industry, or is just something that they've always loved to do?
Yeah. No careers or jobs in the golf industry. It was just something that my family liked to do together. And then as soon as I got my license, I went to the, the golf course that I grew up on actually closed down. Another one opened right when I got my driver's license. So I drove there. I think that was one of the first things I did with my license is drive to the new golf course and apply for a job. And I've been basically I've had a job in the golf industry, whether it's full-time or part-time, pretty much since then.
That's awesome. That's so sweet. Did you play other sports growing up or just pretty much golf?
Hockey was probably my main sport, since the season was a little longer in Minnesota. 100%. I played hockey growing up, and then into college, I played some men's league, and I play some men's league now, but, golf has transitioned to be my main sport lately.
All right. So, I mean, I was not a hockey fan growing up, but my wife is from Canada, so I have been not forced, but I definitely know more hockey than I ever did before. Are you still I don't know. Did you grow up where the Stars still in Minnesota with you, or is that because now they're in Dallas where I am? But I know there is a long history of the Minnesota North Stars. Then they moved to Dallas, but now you have the Wild. Is that right?
Yeah, we got the Minnesota Wild. You stole our Stars.
I'm not from Dallas. I'm a Colorado Avalanche fan, so please don't take out your Star hatred on me.
That might be worse.
Well, we did win the Stanley Cup, you know, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah, good conference rivals.
I mean, I don't even know who our conference rivals are. So that I just know when I was a kid, we hated the Calgary Flames, and now my wife's from Calgary. So I know that's a bit of an awkward. That's awkward with the in-laws sometimes. But anyway, so are you a Wild fan? Are you a Stars fan? Are you a different fan altogether? Does that matter? I don't.
Yep, definitely a Wild fan. Even though sometimes it's tough, we make it to the playoffs consistently, but don't get past the first round most of the time. So definitely a Wild fan. I like all the North Stars garb. I got some of the like some memorabilia, but definitely not a Dallas Stars fan.
Fair enough. Me neither. So I don't blame you. I'm not a Dallas fan of any of the sports teams. So there's no hard feelings there for sure. So you work at Curated, but tell us what your like actual real like job is that you could actually afford to do all this other fun stuff. Because it's not in the golf industry.
Yes.
Right.
It is not. I'm a quality engineer at a medical device company by day and a club fitter by night. So career is...
No, go ahead.
Yep.
No, go ahead.
My career is in the medical device industry. So... we take products that have been in the field that have malfunctioned or a patient might have had an issue with and take it, analyze it and figure out the root cause of the issue so that we can fix that for next time.
All right. That seems like a much more important and serious job than club fitting, but I'll let you handle the important stuff and I'll just keep hitting golf balls on camera for, you know, a couple likes here and there. How did you find or how did you get into, so you've always been in golf, but have you done club fitting before that, or is that kind of your entrance into that world?
Yeah. So when I graduated college with my engineering degree, I was looking for a job in that field and it was taking a while to get one and I needed some money. So I started looking around at different jobs I could have in the meantime to make some change. And I stumbled across a club building position at Golf Galaxy, and I had never built clubs before. I knew a ton about them. I was an avid golfer and went and applied, had an interview at the shop, and he basically decided that whatever I needed to know, he could teach me. He is a very, very good club builder and a club fitter. So I learned a ton working there. Absolutely loved it. I loved it so much that after I did get an engineering job, I continued to work at Golf Galaxy just on Sundays. And that got to be a little bit much. So I stopped doing that as soon as I found Curated, super flexible, fitting people online, virtual. Flexible and very interesting. Get to talk to people all over the country. So I love that. It's
awesome. Yeah, for sure. No, I totally agree. How did you find Curated? I found it on Instagram, like on an Instagram ad.
Yep.
So I'm always curious how people.
Perfect. Yep. That's how I did too.
That's awesome. How long have you been with Curated? Remind me. I should know this already, but
That was 2020, 3.5 years, almost 3.5 years.
Oh, wow. So you've been there a long time.
Okay. Yeah, it was pretty much right at the beginning of COVID.
Gotcha. I did not realize
you'd been there. Right before COVID started, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha. Because I just passed 2 years, so I did not realize that you had been kind of, you're like grandfathered in with the older group. I did not realize that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably don't do it as much as you, but been there for a while.
Yeah. Well, you have a pretty, you know, like you have a pretty big, important, like adult job. So I don't think there's any. Yeah, you don't need to do it as much as I do. And you're probably maybe a lot less stressed than I am most of the time. So, so you're also known as the golf expert on Instagram. So how did you get from playing golf to engineering to club building to getting into Instagram stuff? Because obviously I'm also on Instagram and that kind of stuff. And I find that world of like golf content creation fascinating. And I actually kind of, you know, I mean, I took some like ideas and saw you doing it, which I really liked. So tell me how you got into that world. Or what even made you decide?
I guess too much spare time on my hands. I like staying in touch with people. I think that Instagram is a great way to do that. Share the information that I have. My background in golf has given me a lot of experience, and I like to share that with other people. I think Instagram's a really cool and unique way to do that. Staying in touch with my customer base, getting new customers. I saw that as an opportunity. So now I just like to kind of post products that I find, gear that I try out. My wife has a vintage clothing company. So like last night I posted a piece of clothing that she thrifted. Super cool find. So just a bunch of different stuff that I find cool and that maybe other people can find useful. I like to share.
That's awesome. No, I think that's what I love about your page too is there's not a ton of like bias, in my opinion. I like that you present things in a way that's like, here's this club or here's this piece of gear. Here's what I really like about it, but I don't ever feel like you're pushing like, hey, I'm a TaylorMade guy and screw all the other brands, or I'm a Titleist guy, screw all the other brands. Like, I like that you kind of take this attitude that you kind of, what's the word I'm trying to look for? Like, you just let the clubs kind of show you what they're going to do, and you don't really come, I could be wrong, but you don't seem to come into things with like a bias of like, well, I'm going to like this club just because I've always liked this brand, or I'm going to, you know, like, I'm going to refuse to acknowledge anything else because I'm dead set going this way. Is that, do you feel like that's accurate, or do you feel like you kind of lean somewhere?
No, I appreciate that. I think that's definitely true. That's one of the things I tell my customers too, is that it's really important to keep an open mind. I do that. And I think my golf bag shows that. I play 4, maybe 5 different brands in my bag right now. So I'm not biased to anything. And I think it's fun to test out new stuff and see what it can do. And sometimes it surprises me. So put it in the bag.
So run us down your bag currently right now. What is your setup?
I got the Callaway Paradigm Triple Diamond for my driver.
Love it.
I got the Stealth OG 3-wood and hybrid. I got the Titleist 620 MBs for 4-iron through pitching wedge. My gap wedge, sand wedge, and lob wedge are the Cleveland RTX 6s. And then right now, my newest addition to the bag is the Scotty Cameron Phantom 5.5X, which I absolutely love.
Nice. So you went mallet there because you were playing a blade, right? Am I wrong? You were playing a TaylorMade TP blade? No, yes.
Yeah, I still absolutely love the look of blades. I love the feel of blades. But the Phantom 5, I saw Justin Thomas using it and I had to try it. It performs. Yeah. True.
Unlike Justin Thomas, I hope it performs for you. Clearly you don't have a brand bias. I kind of really like that you just meet so many people that are like, well, I got a Callaway driver, so I have to have Callaway everything. Or I got Titleist iron, so I have to have Titleist everything.
Yeah.
What is the, you've tested out quite, I mean, like just looking at your Instagram, and I mean, I know you, but somebody who's just looking at your Instagram knows that you've tested out quite a bit of stuff this year. Is there like a favorite, like one favorite thing that you've tested out that you're like, out of everything that I've tested, this has been my favorite club or piece of equipment? And if you have more than one, that's fine too.
Yeah. I think that the Paradigm irons I found really interesting because they are really forgiving and great for a majority of the recreational average golfer. I think that a lot of people could really benefit from playing a Paradigm iron. Very easy to hit, hollow body design, super forgiving, and insane amount of distance. I was hitting the 7-iron like 215 or 220 yards or something. Like, just absolutely incredible at the distance. So if somebody's looking for more distance and a forgiving club, That's definitely at the top of my list.
No, I 100% agree with that. Did you hit both the Paradigm and the Paradigm X, or have you just hit one of them?
I hit both. Okay. I like them both equally, I guess. The X did exactly what it was supposed to. It was definitely higher launching and draw bias to it, and it worked. I saw that when I was testing it.
Yeah, 100%. I'm guessing you don't play the Paradigm Irons because you don't need to hit 7-iron 215 yards. Probably not the window you're looking
for. It was too much distance for me, if that's a thing. Yeah. I don't want to hit it that far. Right. They felt great, but I also like the look of a smaller. I play the MBs. I had the Cobra King MBs before these Titleists, and I just like the smaller look. So the Paradigm didn't necessarily suit my eye, but I was really impressed by how long and straight it was.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I mean, and I think I've mentioned on this podcast before, you know, I mean, I guess I'm slightly biased, though I don't feel like I am, because though I do work for Callaway part-time outside of my curated work doing fitting, I actually don't play Callaway irons, so I don't really feel bad kind of mixing in there. But I do agree that those Paradigm irons do everything they're supposed to do, are insanely impressive, and have a wide versatility. Like, you can use them. I think there's a wide range of handicaps that can benefit from them. You don't just have to be a certain, like, 5 handicap slot to actually work with those on both sides of it. So I do agree with you.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, totally.
What, you know, I mean, everybody finds the driver sexy. So what's your favorite driver you've hit this season? Got to talk about driver, because nobody can. Everybody wants the new driver.
Yeah, I am playing the Paradigm Triple Diamond. So I have to say that's my favorite. It feels so different. It's really, really soft feeling. Mm. I don't like the look of it as much as some other drivers at address, because the top line kind of blends into the face, and I find it a little bit challenging to line up squarely. Mm. So that's something that I keep in mind every time I hit it, is just to be conscious about lining it up square. I thought that the TaylorMade Stealth was better than the Stealth 2. So I had that in the bag before the Paradigm. I thought that the original Stealth felt a lot better, and I was getting more distance out of the original Stealth. So I kind of skipped over the Stealth 2, but the Strixon ZX line, the ZX7 was really long and sounded awesome. And then the ZX5 was a really high launching, forgiving club. So that line was pretty sweet. But to answer your question, the sexiest, my favorite driver is the Paradigm Triple Diamond.
Yeah, so I play the Triple Diamond as well, as you know, and I agree with everything you're saying, except for the top line. I actually love the top line, because I love that there's no marker there. That really actually helps me, because I feel like I can just set it down, and I don't have to focus on that little chevron or whatever, you know, of the other models. So I actually really like that, but I can totally see your point there for sure. And I also agree that the Stealth was better than the Stealth 2. I was just super disappointed with the Stealth 2. Like, I was expecting, and, you know, maybe part of it was my expectation, because I did love the Stealth so much that I was like, man, if I love the Stealth this much, what can the Stealth 2 do? And then it kind of just, you know, like, seemed like a bit of a wet fart, like just kind of really like a letdown for me for sure. So that was disappointing.
And the crown, I was a huge fan of the matte crown on the Stealth OG, and the shiny crown on the Stealth 2. I play the Stealth, the original Stealth 3 Wooden Hybrid, and they're awesome. I don't know if anything will replace those in the next couple, 2, 3, 4 years. I absolutely love them.
For sure. Yeah, 3 Wood's one of those clubs, and I know you and I have talked about this before, but like, 3 Woods is one of those clubs that if you find a good one, like, don't get rid of it. Because I made that mistake several years ago, thinking, like, yeah, it's great, but I could probably find something better. And it's just been so hard to replace and find a good 3 Wood. I don't know what it is about them. And maybe you have some more insight on this. I don't really understand why, but 3 Wood seems to be the hardest club for me to find that I like. A and B, the hardest club to fit people into, maybe besides putter. But Yeah, I find 3-1 just a really hard thing to nail down for myself and others. Do you find that to be true?
I definitely agree. I think it's they're making the technology a lot better. So it's getting easier to hit them, I feel like. Growing up through high school and into college, I couldn't even hit one. I feel like the technology has helped a lot with that. But I think the long shaft length and then the significantly smaller head compared to the driver, it just, the sweet spot is so much smaller on a 3-wood. That's the challenge. It's hard to be consistent with them. Like, you hit a good 3-wood and it's a rocket, but then the other 9 you hit are, you know, you might have some low slices or they're all over the place. You never know. But I think that's part of the challenge, is that it's a longer club. So for us amateurs, we're not hitting the sweet spot every time like the pros are, where they take out their 3-wood and they hit it dead straight because they can hit the center of the sweet spot. Mm.
Yeah, definitely makes a difference. If you can, I feel like if you could hit the center, that's why I'm so interested. I find it so interesting, kind of like this whole, the whole culture around clubs, because it seems to me that really at the pro level, and you can probably speak to this more than I can because I don't have a ton of like pro experience or anything like that. But when you can hit the center of the club face as frequently as those guys do, I feel like brand really ceases to make much of a difference. And it's really more about just kind of what suits their eye. Really, like, they're looking for something that fits their eye or feels good in their hands, more so than like, well, TaylorMade's really like explodes more than Callaway's, or Ping is really more forgiving than, you know, pick and choose Titleist. Like, I don't know how much of that really matters when you can hit the face so frequently. Like, I just have a hard time believing like much of that really makes much of a difference.
Yeah. Well, when you're a pro, the only thing that matters is how much $1 million the brand gives you.
100%.
The technology difference, once you get to that level, if you're hitting the sweet spot, I mean, it's not going to be significant. I think, like you said, the pros are looking for the look, the sound, and the feel at the level that they are. If they like the feel of it, they're probably going to play it. But they're so good that they want this to be dialed in with like the launch angle and the spin numbers. Like, they know exactly what that ball is doing as soon as they hit it, and they want to feel confident in trusting that. And I think once they get to that point, like if they have a club that can do that, they're going to play it.
Right. No, I 100% agree. I sometimes think, you know, when you watch those Tiger videos of him like shooting it into certain windows and him being able basically to call his shot, like at the minute percentage he is, I'm like, I don't really know if it matters whether he's holding a TaylorMade iron or a Cobra iron or a Callaway or a Tyler. I mean, like, I don't really think it matters when you can kind of get down to that decimal point of accuracy. Like, one, anybody would build Tiger whatever he wanted, so it's kind of a moot point. But yeah, I think it all just becomes a marketing money game at that point, because again, a guy like him or any of those guys are pretty much going to be able to manipulate the ball however they want to, regardless of what brand is etched on the back end of a club, as long as it, like you said, kind of fits their eye and their feel. So I just find that interesting. Sure. So basically, I think most of these clubs, when we talk about forgiveness, you know, and I think this is just an important point, because so many people are like, well, I want to play what Tiger plays, or I want to play what John Rahm plays, or Scottie Scheffler, these big names that are winning tournaments. You know, like, obviously what they're playing is just because they're getting paid to play that, and not necessarily going to fit anything for your game. So I think all of this, how much of this technology is really for the amateur golfer, and how much they actually be paying attention to things that actually fit their swing type instead of like the brand on the back of the club, because you have these like couple brands that are like, well, there's Titleist, there's Ping, there's TaylorMade, there's Callaway, that are kind of like in this like bubble, maybe throw Mizuno in there depending on the club, or, you know, Cleveland or Strixon. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, you know, other brands get kind of a bad rap, even though they may have the same exact technology or technology that can help you. You know, like a Cobra, like, you just don't see a ton of people like, you know, like jumping at the newest Cobra stuff, or Wilson, or Tour Edge. But like, how many people are going to hit a Tour Edge iron better than a Titleist iron if you would just scratch the name off. I'd be curious to think, like, just your overall thoughts on that whole deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's, at different levels, the technology works differently. So a lot of these companies are designing these clubs for the Tour Pro, and then because that's who has the say. But then they also have their next line of clubs that is more for the high handicapper who needs to kill that slice. But that person is probably not going to see a huge difference if they buy a $1,000 iron set from Titleist versus a $600 set from Tour Edge. Like, their performances might be pretty similar based on their playing style. So, I guess definitely just depends on the golfer and what their goals are and what their style of play is like.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. So talk to me about, if you were to give maybe like, and it doesn't have to be one, I'm just going to say one piece of advice to, like, you know, the average golfer looking for new equipment, like what is the biggest thing, or maybe it's a couple things that you would like, that you are really trying to convey to somebody, you know, because there's a lot of people out there who are uninformed or misinformed, or like, you know, I'm a 20 handicap, but I want to swing a blade or something like that. So what are you trying to convey most often, or what's most important for people trying to get into new equipment that really are misinformed or uninformed?
Yeah, I guess know what your goals are, because if you actually want to play the best golf possible, like, you're going to have to try things that you might not be comfortable with. You're going to have to listen to some advice that you maybe have never heard before. So to keep an open mind on suggestions and different technology that might really benefit you based on what you want to be doing on the golf course. If you want to look like a Tour Pro and play blades, but you're shooting in the 90s or the 100s, like that's fine. If you just want to, like, you know, just go out there and have a good time and have some cool looking clubs. But if you want to lower that score and get it down into the mid to low 80s, like, you might need some different technology that you haven't tried before. So right. I think definitely just keep an open mind and take some suggestions and see where it goes, because it could really make a big impact on your game.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not even going to add to that, because I don't know if there's anything that I can say that's better. I really, really like what you said there. So yeah, I mean, I think knowing your goals is so important, because I don't know how many people actually have goals when they go to shop for things, besides the fact that it's just like, well, I pay, you know, I play 20-year-old clubs, or, and I just want more forgiving clubs. Okay, well, what is your goal? And sometimes they don't even know what that goal is. So I find that's a super helpful and interesting way to look at it. One of the questions that I meant to ask you before when we were talking about testing that I forgot, but I want to get your take on, is what club or brand or line really surprised you in testing? Was there anything that, like, really surprised you, or really kind of like, man, I had a wildly different expectation. I thought this was going to be terrible and it ended up really good, or I thought this was going to be really good and it actually was really bad, or anything like that. I'd love to hear what you thought on that.
Yeah, I was surprised at the Cobra Woods. I was expecting that I would be a fan of those. The Speed Zone, I thought, were a really cool looking, good feeling wood. And the new Aerojets, I didn't personally like the feel of them. And I honestly could barely get the ball off the ground with them. But I mean, obviously that was just me, but that was one of the things that surprised me this year, is the Cobra Woods. And then the Callaway Woods were the thing that surprised me in the good way. I've been a big fan of the TaylorMade Woods, especially last year with the Stealths. Personally wasn't a huge fan of the Rogues, and then this year it kind of flip-flop for me. I was pleasantly surprised with the Callaway Paradigm Woods, and they're a premium club. I'm really liking my driver, and the woods and the hybrids that I tested were awesome too.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's really funny.
What surprised you this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, and I know you and I have talked about this before, but really, I mean, we're on the same page, I think, as far as those go. I think we both were really, really big fans of the stealth. Well, I know we were. I don't think we were. You know, such big fans of the stealth that I really was like, I don't know if anything dethrones the stealth ever. Like, I might play the stealth for years. Like, that's how I felt about it. And then, you know, I hit the paradigm, and I, like you, had really never been a huge Callaway guy. I had had a Rogue, the original Rogue 3 Wooden Hybrid, like maybe 2017, 2018. And I actually really liked that 3 Wooden Hybrid setup. But Callaway had just never really gotten my goat as far as equipment. I don't even really know what it was. Like, they didn't do anything or nothing that upset me. I did think the Rogue ST line was also flat. So I didn't really have a lot of high expectations for the paradigm because I just wasn't a huge Rogue ST fan. I liked the Maverick, but I wasn't like as gaga as some other people were. I wasn't a huge fan of the Epic Max and Speed either. So, but then I hit the paradigm like really early on before it hit the market. And I was just like blown away. Like, I could not believe the numbers I was getting. And more so than that, like just the dispersion, just like how accurate I was, even with the triple diamond version of it. So that really kind of blew me away. And, you know, like I've had the driver in my bag since like the 4th of January and it hasn't gone anywhere. So, and I've tried to kind of beat it just out of like skepticism. So, you know, like I'll get the old stealth out. I've gotten the stealth too. I've tried the TSR. I've tried the Aerojet. I've tried the Strixon and I just can't. I even tried like shorter shafts on different clubs. Yeah. So the Callaway, I mean, just like you, really surprised me in a good way. I was super disappointed with Titleist irons, especially T200s and below. I just really was hoping, you know, and again, Titleist, I know Titleist makes fantastic stuff. So this is not me like crapping on Titleist, but at the same time, like Titleist is really, they're kind of like Ping for me. I find them very boring. I don't feel like they do a lot of interesting things. You know, I've always just kind of been at the top of the golf world, which I get, but like, I don't get excited about their stuff. And so I was really hoping to be kind of proven wrong. And I was really let down. I thought the T200s for as like a competitor to like the Mizuno 225 or the P790 or the Paradigm. I mean, like I would recommend any of those, the Cobra Forge Tech, Strixon ZX5. I mean, the T200 doesn't even come in really anywhere in a recommendation for me to a customer or anything like that, or just anybody asking for advice. And I feel like that's a big miss on Titleist's part because there's, you know, they're trying, you know, they are supposed to be like an upper echelon brand, and for them to miss on T200, T300, T400 was pretty disappointing given their, like, I mean, obviously Scotty Cameron is amazing. Vokey is amazing. The TSR line is really, really, really good. Mm-hmm. And even their irons, you know, like you play their blades and I know their blades are really good. And I know even the T100 line is pretty good. So that was kind of a disappointment for me. I was hoping to like be pleasantly surprised and I just wasn't. And then another thing that surprised me in the positive light was I think Strixon, maybe like pound for pound, came out with the best overall line this year from driver down to putter. If you want to include kind of Cleveland and Strixon in the same boat, like the ZX5 LS driver was amazing. The wood is actually really, really good too. You know, I can take or leave the hybrid, but again, if Strixon wants to offer me a deal, like I would hit it. And then the irons are just fantastic. I mean, like, you know, the Blade, the ZX7, the ZX5, the ZX4. I thought they were all just incredible. Like, they all felt good. You know, I mean, even on the ZX7, which is, I know what Brooks plays, like, I feel like I could hit those irons and play and score relatively well. Like, I didn't feel like they were over intimidating or anything like that. So I feel like four higher end irons, they gave a lot of playability to amateur golfers. And I thought their feel was like up there with what like a Mizuno club. You know, and again, I mean, Cleveland makes great wedges. And then the new Huntington Beach soft putters, I thought were extremely good, especially for the price point. Like they put that UST shaft in there. I tried a blade and a mallet version of that, and again, was just incredibly impressed. So, yeah, Strixon for me, I think pound for pound, really impressed me from up and down. If you want to, like I said, include Cleveland and Strixon together, I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And I think that they won the most improved this year. They definitely came a long ways in their woods for sure. Their irons, they were awesome. The ZX7s I had before, the ZX7 MK2s are phenomenal this year as well. The wedges I play, I absolutely think that the RTX 6s are phenomenal. Mm. And then the putters, I'd never thought that I would go back to a putter like that. And I have the 11S and the 1, and I am like shocked at how like good they feel. I have the mm-hmm. all-in shaft in both of them, and they're just great overall putters.
Right.
Yeah, and they're only $250 with that all-in shaft in there, which, again, this is not a sales pitch podcast, but, I mean, it's important to, like, you know what I mean? It really is, because, you know, you can get that same putter in, like, a Scotty version with a shaft like that for $500. So, I mean,
yeah.
Again, you know, I'm not saying not to play Scotty Cameron, because we both do. All I'm saying is, like, it's a pretty good option at half the price that may perform just as well.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to lie, if I were to close my eyes and hit both of those, like the wingback style putter, the 5.5 Phantom of Scotty, and then the 11S of the Cleveland, like, I would be able to tell the difference, but not in like a good, bad way, just like it feels different, but they mm-hmm. both seem to roll just as true. So for half the price, $250 compared to $500, like, that's definitely something to consider.
Yeah, it's hard to argue for sure, especially with what you were saying, in that I never even thought I would like a putter like that. And here comes not even something that I like, but something that I could see going in my bag and performing as well as a top end Scotty or Toulon, or almost like, you know, Bettinardi, something like that. They're like, wow, I mean, like, I think I'm going to make just as many putts. I don't know if I'm going to miss, you know, any more putts than I would with a $500 putter. So I think it becomes a very interesting conversation from that perspective.
The only knock that I have on that, the new soft Premier line, is the, like, the black sight line kind of. Mm. If that would have been just all steel with the normal sight line, but it's like a thick ball width black sight line that kind of takes away from that premium look.
Yeah.
I feel like that's just my personal preference. If, like, the Scotty Cameron doesn't have that, or the other high end putters don't have that black kind of plasticky look there. But I mean, besides that, they feel great, and it does actually help with alignment, because it's a thicker, like, lineup tool that helps. But I don't know. I'm just a huge fan of them. I didn't think that I would be, and they felt so smooth.
Yeah, no, I mean, I 100% agree. And I still have, I have a friend using the 11S right now. I still have my 1 as well. And I'm just like, I'm always so, I mean, again, I've had the same Scotty since 2011. It has no sight lines on it either, which is, I really like that. But I still, for some reason, I'm always just like, should I pull that Cleveland out and put it in the bag? I don't know. It's just sitting there. It's got a really nice shaft on it. I need to use it more, but I kind of always go back to old trusty, just because it's that one club where I just, like, I feel so comfortable that it's hard to switch back. But there's some good stuff out there. That Cleveland's one of them for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Any other, before I want to kind of switch gears to, like, what's happened in the golf world since we've been away. But before we do that, is there any other equipment stuff that you were like, man, this is something I was really excited about or want to talk about or disappointed with? And it can be anything, balls, or if there's not, no big deal. I wanted to give you a chance to, because you have so much good knowledge, that if there was something that we didn't touch on and you wanted to, I wanted to hear about it.
Yeah. Well, I've never been this is like off the track of clubs, but that's still fine. Equipment. I've never been a huge shoe guy. I've had my TW13s for 10 years, but the new Air Jordans are so sick. I got the low G's in all white, absolutely love them. And then nice. I just ordered the high G's in the white and green, and I'm super pumped to get them. I think they're just fun. It's just a fun way to kind of be unique on the golf course. Yeah. So those are two things that I really like. And then the two pieces of equipment that I've been using, not while I play, but in preparation, is the Super Speed Sticks. I gained like probably like 8 or 10 mile per hour club head speed. And then, so they really work. It takes a lot of work. You have to do it religiously, but if you follow the program, it's a really cool tool to get more distance, and you absolutely can swing faster after using them. Now I'm kind of maintaining the club head speed. I'm not gaining anymore. I'm kind of as fast as I want to get, I guess. I don't want to be like swinging out of my shoes. So I'm as fast as I want to get, but they're also a super, super good warm-up tool before you're around to get loose. And then you kind of start swinging the heavier weighted shaft to kind of loosen up, and then you end the session right before your round with the lightest weight shaft. And it really makes you feel like you can swing fast. And then there's like studies that say if you do that before you play, you go into the round swinging faster. So that's what I do. And then my FlightScope Mevo is the other tool that I've been using. I compared it straight up to a TrackMan, and the session that I did, I was getting like plus or minus 2 or 3 yards off compared to the TrackMan, which I thought was crazy considering it's like a 1/1000th or 1/100th of the price. So I'm impressed with the FlightScope. I kind of use it just to get my numbers dialed. I don't use it all the time, but I bring it to the range with me so that if I want to see how I'm hitting it, I can get my distances, my spin numbers, my shot height. So there's a bunch of really cool stats in it. I'm not sure if you've ever used one. Have you?
No, not the Mevo. I've used the R10, but not the Mevo.
Okay. Yeah. So another cool thing is that it downloads after your session straight to your profile, and you can look at it on your computer down to a spreadsheet, and you can get your average distances. And it really helps because then next time you go play, you know your average yardages. And I feel like when you're just at the, like, getting your numbers at the golf course, you sometimes get overconfident and like, oh, I can hit my pitching wedge this far, but actually that's just your best shot. Like your average is like actually 8 yards less than that. So it's humbling sometimes, but it's a cool piece of technology.
Yeah, for sure. So I don't have the Mevo, but I do have, I have the Garmin golf watch, but I have the sensors. You can kind of see it right here.
Nice.
I have these sensors that screw into the club. And so basically the exact same thing. You're using it on the course, but it's tracking your distance. And then it takes all of that, downloads it. And then I have an app that shows me, like, here's the longest you've ever hit this club. Here's your average. The only disadvantage is when you get into like some smaller clubs. So if I wanted to use pitching wedge to chip with, it's going to read that, and that's going to go into my shot selection. So, you know, it's not always just full shots. So I could have a round where, you know, let's say I only hit 5 pitching wedges and three of them went 150, 2 of them went 160. And then one of them went 10 yards because I did a bump and run. Then it kind of skews the data a little bit, but it's better than anything I had before, where it was just like, just guesstimating, because today I hit my 7-iron, you know, 180 pretty consistently. So I'm just going to write down 180. But I agree. Something like that has been super, super helpful. And there's something else. What did you mention? Speed. I had a question. So the speed sticks. How I haven't done them, but I've heard great things. What does the program kind of look like? You're saying do it religiously. Like, what does that kind of look like for you? And two, how long before you started seeing results would you say?
Yeah. So the program, I think when you start it, I think it's like 3 times a week. So you get kind of acclimated. Awesome. You don't injure yourself. You work into it. And there is a workout, like suggested workout, so you don't just like jump into it and hurt yourself. And then there's stretches and stuff too, so You are like preparing your body. It's like a full exercise almost. And I believe when you first start the program, it's 3 times per week for like 4 to 6 weeks or something like that. And it's like 50 swings. It's nothing super crazy. It's just to kind of get you into feeling what the program is going to be like. And then it goes up to 4 times a week and you're doing a lot more swings. You're doing Happy Gilmore type swings. You're swinging from your knees. You're doing a bunch of different types of swings to activate different parts of your body. And then you kind of bring it all back together. And that's where the speed is gained. And I wish I remembered the weight, because it's meant to simulate a driver weight, but the weights at the end are all slightly different. So I think the lightest one is 10 or 15% lighter than the driver. And then it's like 5% lighter and then 5 or 10% heavier. So they're all weighted slightly differently. And then you do them in a certain sequence to gain that speed throughout the program. Yeah. And I probably saw results after like consistent results after like 2 months. But then the like, you make significant improvement and then it kind of plateaus and you stick with the program and it's an expected plateau and then you make another few mile per hour gain. So it's a long program and I did it for probably 2 full years and gained that. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a commitment, but yeah. It was worth it to me. I went from probably like 112 mile per hour to like a cruising 118, 120. Wow. I can get up to the high 120s, but that's only because of the program. I don't do that on every swing, obviously, but it's there if I need it to be.
Do you feel like with that mile per hour gain, do you feel like you're still swinging within yourself, or is this like, you know, like how's your accuracy? How's your balance? How are all those things? Because I think it's easy to be like, well, I'm not saying you did, but it's easy to be like, well, I gained 10 miles an hour, but now my ball, yeah. I don't know if it's Bryson, if it's going to spray like all over the place or if I'm going to be like locked in. How has that been for you?
Yeah. So definitely I noticed a loss of accuracy as the program started because it's speed that you've never had before. Your swing is changing. The timing's changing. Right. So I did have to dial in the accuracy. You have the speed available to you, but then you kind of can dial in the accuracy. I after you do the program for a while, you kind of get the timing back, the rhythm back.
Yeah.
And my personal rule is that I'm never going to swing out of my shoes. I want to be perfectly balanced at the end of every swing. So. Mm-hmm. However, I swing however hard I want as long as I'm balanced in my finish. And that's kind of my rule because if that goes away, you don't know where the ball's going.
Yeah, 100%. I think anybody listening to this should, if they take nothing away from this episode, which is probably pretty likely, if they can grab one thing, it might be that, though, to honestly, like, swing as hard as you can while staying balanced. The goal is not to swing as hard as you can. The goal is to swing as hard as you can, as long as you stay balanced. And for some of us, that might not be very hard. And for somebody like maybe like you can be pretty hard, but you have to be balanced, which I think is such a key that we forget. Like how many guys do we see playing, myself included, hit a ball. I mean, I just posted a whole vlog today where I hit a really good 5-iron, but I fell off balance. Like it's such an easy thing to do because we're kind of going after it or whatever it is.
Yep. Super interesting. Definitely. Especially in the amateur recreational game, I think it's so common that players swing as hard as they can and the control is not there. The consistency is not there. Like you watch guys on tour sometimes, that happens. And the shots usually are not a good outcome. It's when they're in themselves, swinging in under control and balance that's when they're playing their game.
Yeah, such a good point. All right. I may have to look into this super stick thing. I don't know if I can commit 2 years. I don't know if I've committed to anything for 2 years besides my wife, maybe. But yeah, I mean, I love it. I mean, I really love that idea. So I'm going to look into that for sure. So thanks for sharing all of that stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's switch gears real quick. I know we've been on for a while, so anytime you need to hop off, feel free to hop off. But we haven't been on since our Masters recap episode, which again, like the worst timing in the world, maybe to take off a golf podcast for all three majors and then come back afterwards. So, but some big things have happened, and I know that you kind of, you know, you follow golf pretty religiously. So, you know, we have the PGA won by a LIV golfer. We have the US Open won by Wyndham Clark, who was obviously first time and had such a horrible, like, 2021-2022 season, like basically missed almost every cut. And then we have the merger after all of the PGA LIV drama. We have this like merger that's going to happen, Senate hearings, and then we have this 5-7 lefty winning the British Open. So I don't really know like where to start with that. I mean, I feel like we got to talk about it in some ways. Is there anything that I just threw out that you're like, you have a strong opinion on, passionate about? We can start just with, because the British Open is the most recent, or what about any of that really kind of like gets you amped up, gets you fired up, or anything like that? And if there's nothing, just say like, meh, I don't know.
I thought that the US Open was definitely the most exciting. Okay. Cheering for Ricky when he was in the lead. I think he was in the lead going into Sunday, or maybe after the first 48 hole or 36 holes, maybe he was leading. But so fun to cheer Ricky. I sent you the picture. I was wearing my all orange outfit for cheering him on. But it was really fun watching him. He was a really good competitor. It came down to the wire with Wyndham winning actually over Rory. So that was another kind of aspect to it, that Rory made a charge at the end. And then I can't speak for everyone else, but I didn't really know too much about Wyndham, but he just seems like a super cool dude. So like in his post-round interview, it was just like fun to see a good guy win like that. And like going over to the British Open this week, he was in some pressers that he never has been in before because he hasn't been like on the scene. So I thought that the US Open was definitely the most interesting.
Yeah, I was excited for Wyndham just because he's a native Denver guy and I am also a Denver guy. So it's always, see a bunch of like famous Denver, Colorado golfers winning a ton of stuff. So that's always kind of a nice connection. It's one of those things. And I mean, you probably know this too, although you probably appreciate like other people winning more than me. It's hard for me to get the US Open was interesting because it was kind of like right down to the end. So that kind of like keeps you engaged regardless if, you know, a guy you want to win or not wins. And this is just because of like my own, like I grew up in the Tiger era. And so we were so used to like, if Tiger didn't win, it was kind of a letdown for all of us Tiger fans. Yeah. And I know you're a huge Tiger fan too. So it's funny you say that because I was thinking about the British Open, and a lot of the feedback has been like, well, it was very boring, and it was because basically Harmon had this lead and nobody really ever got close to that lead. So there was really no thrilling golf being played. And I just like totally agree with that. And then was like, when Tiger picked that place apart, or his, you know, massive wins that we all watched growing up, like we're glued in, even if he's winning by 15 shots, like we're excited. Like it's still must watch golf, but anybody else who wins by a blowout margin, we're just like probably turning it off or just checking it every once in a while, because like, I don't necessarily need to watch Brian Harman win by 6 strokes in the rain. Like I don't know. And that's not a knock on Wyndham or Brian or any of these guys who win these majors. It's just like, it's hard to get it as a viewer, as like an entertainment value when I'm sitting at my house. It's really, really hard to like get engaged with it and just like sit there shot after shot when you're like there is nothing happening. And I just think that's such an interesting, like, I don't know if it's a Tiger era thing or just like a, because I don't even know if it would have mattered if Rory or Rahm or Scottie Scheffler or was winning by six shots. I don't know if I would have stayed with it. I did watch it just because it's the Open and I knew we would talk about it on this podcast, but at the same time, it was just really hard to be like, yeah, this is fun. Like, it wasn't that much fun to watch.
No.
But, yeah. So anyways, I just think it's interesting.
I thought it was interesting too. I definitely lost interest. It was, in my opinion, like boring, but kudos to Brian Harman because boring golf, like he was playing boring golf for the most part. He got in some trouble off the tee, but his putting was insane. Like if he missed the green, he was still going to make par because he was making everything. So it was like boring knowing that he was kind of in control and able to do that. And it kind of had the feeling like he was going to be able to close it out because he had such a big lead and he was playing so solid. But I feel like it was the character because if Rory or some other big, like if Ricky would have done that, like at the US Open, if a character like that was in the lead and that much in control, I would have been a lot more interested and a lot more drawn in to watch because I personally had no cheering interest for Brian Harman and I have nothing against him. I've just never been a Brian Harman like fan. But I am a Rory fan. Are there Brian Harman fans?
Like, I mean, in all honesty, I don't mean that again. That sounds like a very like dickish thing to say, and I don't mean it that way. It's just to your point, like, and I heard, you know, they were the guys on Foreplay were talking about this same thing. They're like, you know, it's weird that in golf you're supposed to like be a fan and support whoever wins, but that's not how any other sport works. Like, if your guy, if your team is in the playoffs or the championship and they lose, you're like heartbroken and you hate the other team and you just want to like, you know, like you want to reach to the screen and like, you know, punch him in the face, but you're not like allowed to do, there's like this unwritten thing with golf that you're not allowed to do that. And I thought that was a super interesting point of like, well, you know, like you got to support Brian Harman because he won. It's like, well, I can be really, I don't have to. Like if I wanted Rory to win, I could be super upset that Brian Harman won and be like super pissed about it. You know what I mean? I just think it's funny that we have to be like, oh, good job, Brian, which it was a good job. Like, you can respect the game. You know, like, it's kind of like the LeBron argument. Like, I can't stand LeBron. Like, I can respect what he brings to a court and also, like, detest who he is or really dislike him. But I think it's funny. There's this whole golf thing where it's like you have to support whoever wins, which is just a very weird deal. Like, no, I wanted somebody else to win.
Yeah, that's a good point. I can't say that I like, you know, it's not like I'm not supporting him. It's hard to root against like a good guy for my personal reasons. Right. Like I love Rory and I wanted him to win. So, but yeah, I definitely see that.
Yeah. And I wasn't rooting against Brian either. I wasn't being like, I hope you bogey out so you lose by one. Or anything like that. I just thought it was an interesting point how we really do, like, you know, if you take it into the team sport and it's the, you know, like if I'm a huge Broncos fan. So if the Broncos are playing, you know, whoever in the Super Bowl and, you know, like that other team wins, I'm not going to just be like, well, it was really hard for me to cheer against them because they were, you know, putting on a masterful football performance. I'm going to be like F those dudes. The Broncos should have won this game. You know, it was horseshit. Like, you know, all of those things that you do when your team doesn't win, or you're just like, man, that was embarrassing. I can't believe we didn't do that. Like, God, I freaking hate the who, you know, insert name here. But we don't do that at golf, which is just such an interesting, like, just like a weird cultural thing with golf culture is that like, we just don't do that. And if you do that, if you come out and be like, if you did come out and been like, man, I really was hoping Brian Harman stumbled so Rory had a chance or Rahm had a chance, then you're kind of looked at like as an asshole where if you're rooting for, you know, the Broncos or the Wild and they don't win and you're like super pissed about it. Everyone's like, well, yeah, he loves that team. Of course he's pissed about it. Like he's not going to be like, man, I'm glad the Seahawks won. Like that doesn't make any sense. So I just do think it's an interesting cultural thing with golf that you're like, yay.
You're not supposed to do that in golf, but I think that's why I said that the US Open was the most interesting, because I was doing that. I was like, when I think Wyndham was on 17, I think it was that short par three, and he missed the green, and it got such a lucky break. It didn't go into the super, super thick stuff. Mm-hmm. I was like rooting for him to not get up and down and to miss that putt and to not get up and down on 18, because Rory was right there, and I wanted Rory so bad. But that's why I thought that the US Open was so interesting, is because I had that rooting, like that other sport cheering mentality in that moment on those last holes.
Yeah. I mean, and I think I remember rooting against Tiger's closest opponent. Like, if he was down, and this guy was, you know, like, I remember rooting against those guys, wanting them to stumble. Like, I just, you know, and I remember, and I love Rocco Mediate now. I think he's awesome, and the stuff he puts out on his social is awesome. But in 2008, I, like, wanted him to stumble. Like, I wanted Tiger to win.
I hated him then.
Right, we all did. Michael Campbell, the same thing. Like, you know, was it KJ Choi? Yeah, Y.E. Yang. Like, you wanted those, like, I was literally rooting for those guys to stumble. Like, hit a ball and you're like, please go in the water. Like, get in the water. Like, don't make it. You know, I vividly remember rooting against those guys when Tiger was not, you know, like, just dominating. Tiger gets the exception, because if it's Tiger, you're allowed to root against a guy. And nobody, you know what I mean? Like, you're allowed to be like, no, F you, Sergio. Tiger's taking this home. He's the one guy that, like, just gets a free pass on. You're allowed to root against somebody who's trying to take a title from Tiger, but everybody else seems like you got to kind of be, it's just a weird deal. But I'm glad you were rooting against Wyndham, not because I don't think Wyndham's a super cool dude, but just because, like, yeah, like, you have your favorites and you want your favorites to win. Like, I was rooting against Brooks Koepka to win the PGA. I didn't want him to win the Masters. I didn't want him to win the, I don't ever want him to win. I can't stand him. Like, I was gonna
ask you about that.
Yeah, I hope he, like, you know, like, I don't want any, like, I don't want him to die or anything, but if he, like, snaps his Achilles tendon, like, I'm fine with that. Because he comes off as a prick. You know, he's got this, like, swagger, this air about him that he doesn't even, like, care about most of golf, or I'd rather, you know, like, not be here. I'm just here for, like, the majors, which I think is a facade, because, you know, like, you can look at his career and see what he's done to kind of get it. But yeah, like, I'm fine admitting, like, I root against, and it has nothing to do with LIV Golf, because I was rooting against Brooks long before LIV Golf ever happened. But, like, I'm rooting against, like, Brooks, or I'm rooting against Bryson, because I just don't like those dudes. I'll tell you what, like, if Phil Mickelson was in the mix at the PGA Championship, I probably would have been rooting for him. Like, there was a part of me, even during the Masters, when I was like, could he make a run on Sunday and do it? Like, I think that would be a great storyline. And I don't, you know, like, I know there's a lot of Phil haters out there, which is fine. But yeah, I mean, like, yeah, that's fine. But yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. So anyways, you know what I mean? I just, like, so I was, I'm fine being like, I was actively rooting against Brooks, but I still, I mean, again, you can still respect the game. Like, Brooks Koepka is a hell of a golfer. He clearly knows how to how to turn it on in the moments that matter. And you can't deny a guy who has five majors, for sure. Yeah. So I would totally respect the game there, and the talent, but I can still root. I mean, I think you can still root against the guy for sure.
Yeah, he has that swagger, and I definitely see, he kind of, like, irked me the wrong way when he took the LIV deal, and I don't know, I was a Brooks fan before that, and I'm kind of slowly becoming one again. I like the confidence, and I watched a good video the other night with Dylan Block, Michael Block's kid, and he must have met Brooks at the PGA or something around, after Michael Block contended or something. But he said that Brooks in person is a completely different person than he is on TV, where he puts on that facade, and that he's actually like I think Dylan Block called him like a big baby. He's just like a super, just genuine, like, nice guy, where he puts on this facade that he's all cocky and confident and stuff, which I like that. I think it's, I don't know, it's just fun to see, like, a person like that and then dominate, it takes a lot of confidence to do that. But
for sure,
I can see it going the other way too.
Yeah, you have to respect it, because if you're gonna put on that facade and be like, I don't give a shit about anything, I only care about the majors, you got to be able to back it up, and he can, attesting to his like performance the first two of the year. So again, if you're gonna have it, at least back it up, which he does do. So again, I respect the game, but I will not lose any sleep if he doesn't win anything else, for sure. So speaking of Michael Block, I totally forgot about that storyline. What was your take on that whole thing? I'd love to hear, because he was like golf's like redeeming angel for like 4 days.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, like pretty much, you know, like blows it up here in Dallas and then in Canada. And it's like the golf world flipped a 180 on him. And it was just like, you're like, it felt like Batman. Like, you're the savior we all want. And then you're like, oh, well, we don't need you right now. Kind of thing. So I thought that was interesting.
No, I thought it was awesome. I was really curious though. Like, I feel, because I think he got a top 10, right?
Yeah, top 10, top 15, something like that.
Oh yeah, top 15. I think he was 15. I was curious as to why, because I feel like other PGA pros have contended. Like, I feel like, but they've never gotten so popular as he did instantly. I was kind of confused. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe no other PGA pros have really contended that closely. But yeah. I was wondering why he blew up so much more than anybody has in the past. But it was cool to see. The dunk that he made on the par three was sick. Like, after he had already had all that media attention, he does that. That was really cool to see. Yeah. And based on all the interviews, he seemed just like really appreciative and happy to be there. And that's that. I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool to see. But yeah, then he got a couple sponsors exemptions. And I didn't follow him that closely, but like you said, I don't think he performed up to his PGA championship level.
Yeah, no, he definitely put up some 80s. I'm pretty sure in both tournaments. He didn't make the cut in either one. Which, you know, I mean, again, part of me understand. Part of me is like, Cinderella story, like, you know, maybe he shouldn't have gotten those exemptions. It's like, hey man, take your moment in the sun and ride off. Though I don't blame him if somebody's gonna give it to you. Like, when are you gonna get these opportunities? So you gotta take them for sure.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine being like a guy, you know, I mean, well, first of all, this is not like his first PGA, and it's not his first like kind of like cross into that more professional world. Like, he's well known for being like the best player out of his like pro group in that area.
Yeah.
And so I don't, you know, like, it wasn't one of these things where it's like, nobody's ever heard of this guy. And then he just skyrockets. Having said that, I think to answer, and I don't know this for sure, I think to answer your question is, I don't know if there's been a PGA pro who's contested all 4 days like he did. Especially in the social media era, which might be why he's getting more hype, because I can't remember a time. Again, not that I pay a really close attention to the PGA pros that are in it, but I can't remember a time since like social media has kind of become this whole new animal that has happened. And I think just because of that, that might be why he kind of like got that's what I'm guessing. It's kind of, he got the attention because there really wasn't the infrastructure around golf before that there is now.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I also think, like, I asked this question on my Instagram, and I'm going to stand by it, though I think it might be an unpopular opinion, is like, people were like, you know, would you rather be Brooks at the PGA Championship or would you rather be Michael Block? And I think, like, from a mythical, like, incredible story perspective, like, nobody will remember who won this PGA championship 5 years from now. Like, you're going to have to go Google it. You're not going to remember it off the top of your head, but that story, that's kind of like a tin cup moment. Like, you're going to remember that his story for a long time. Like, it's going to get replayed on highlight reels and all of these things, you know, for decades after this PGA Championship is over. So I'm almost like, I almost would rather be Michael Block in that specific tournament, because like, yeah, I didn't win a major, and you know, I know winning a major is such a big deal in the golf world, but that kind of like mythopoetic story like lives on, and that legend lives on long after kind of like anybody really remembers who won the 2023 PGA without having to just like look at a list and be like, oh yeah, Brooks won in 2023. But like, oh yeah, that Michael Block guy, that was insane. Like, I remember watching that. I remember that, you know, like you said, I remember that dunk on, you know, 17 at the end. I remember this whole big, like, I think that's a cooler story personally, but that's just me. And I know I've gotten flack for saying that already, but I would much rather, I think I'd take Block in that scenario.
Well, we'll see how it plays out. I'm really curious, because he, with the top 15, he qualified for next year's PGA, so he'll get to do it all over again. But I got to go in against you on your unpopular opinion. I would rather have the trophy at the end. But the story is really cool, and it will kind of be fun to see it. You know, I'm sure it'll be talked about next year, and see how the story kind of relays year after year, and how that inspires other PGA pros too.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I'm actually pretty excited. I don't think we'll hear, you know, I do follow him on Instagram, but I don't think we'll hear a ton from him as far as like the golf landscape is concerned. And we'll all be kind of like reminded of it next year at this time. We're like, oh man, that was so cool. And we'll see how that kicks out. So, all right, last thing, and then I'm going to let you go, is I want to know, I don't know if we've even really talked about this. Maybe we have, but I'd like you to tell the world, and by the world, I mean like the few people listening here. So what are your, you know, because of the PGA Live merger, and we didn't really have an episode on this, but like, I'd love your thoughts just on the Live PGA stuff in general, and then what your thoughts are of this whole merger. And then we can kind of like, we'll put the episode to rest after that. But I can't leave without at least touching on all of that friction, because it's a huge golf moment. Yeah.
We got to touch on it. So at first I did not understand it. I guess the summary of it is that I still don't understand it. the agreement to have an agreement was, I think, brought out to the public at the wrong time. Mm. And the players on the tour, in my opinion, should have had more knowledge on the situation, where I think it was the Canadian Open, I think, is when it kind of came out, like that Wednesday or Tuesday right before the tournament started. And that was the story for that week. And all the players were just upset because they had nothing. They knew nothing about it. I saw an article that Tiger knew nothing about it. Rory knew nothing about it. And I feel like if they were going to bring it to the public, that the top dogs at least should have been informed and have a say. That makes me think that something went wrong and it wasn't supposed to be publicized at that stage. I also think that having the Senate hearings this early in the process is very odd for a private deal. And I don't know. I think it's all really weird. I'm not a Liv fan. I love the PGA Tour. If I was a player, I feel like I'd have to say I would stay on the PGA Tour. I would take Rory's side. But that said, it's a lot of money that they turned down, so I don't know what I would actually do in that situation. But for at this point, where I stand right now, is that I'm honestly just kind of confused on the whole situation. And I'm just curious to see where it goes. And I just want it, like, I don't want to hear anything about it until a decision is made or they know like what's going to happen, because there's just a whole bunch of people saying, oh, this could happen, this could happen, this. They basically have nothing right now. It's an agreement to have an agreement. And I'm not a Liv guy. I'm a PGA Tour guy. So what are your thoughts on it?
When it first came out, when it first came out, like when Liv first kind of came out, I was like vehemently against it, just from like a moral or ethical standpoint and what it represented. You know, again, I think, like you said, it's easy to sit here and say I would choose the PGA Tour. I think as I've thought about it more, I think it depends who you are on the PGA Tour. If you're Rory, I think it's easy to say, well, I'm going to stick to the PGA Tour because the money, while life-changing, I mean, Rory already has all the money he'll ever need for him and his kids and his grandkids and, you know, exponentiate that down.
And John Rahm said that too.
They all are, they're already pretty much set financially. I think if you're a guy who is just coming out of college or like, you know, you're paying your own way week to week just to see if you can hit. And then this organization is like, here's $20 million and you have 10, you know, you have only enough for the next tournament in your pocket. Now that is life-changing money. And I think it's really, really hard to turn down generational changing wealth. So I think I would be much more, you know, like if it was me right now and somebody said, hey, Ryan, we'll give you $20 million, $30 million, whatever, $1 million to go over to this league and do whatever, you know, like that changes the landscape of my entire, you know, like financial life, what my, you know, freedom, what my parent, my wife can do, how I can help different people. So again, it's really hard to turn that down and be like, well, you know, because of this other thing that is not really related to golf, but is related to who's funding it, I'm going to turn down something that could, you know, like completely change the game for my family. So that's what I've, and I also kind of go back and forth on, is it a golfer's responsibility to like, I don't know, like hold that social justice, like gray area, like that tension, like, is it their job to be champions of that? And I just, I don't know if I know an answer, and that may be like more of a philosophical or political conversation. I mean, I think for me, it's like morally, ethically, I think it's easy because no one's ever going to offer me that kind of money to be like, yeah, I'd stick with the PGA Tour. But you know, I have to, like, I totally understand a guy who's grinding it out or these guys coming out from college and just being like, well, here's $40 million for you to come play half the time, travel the world, you know, get to be with your family a lot more often. It would be hard to turn down if, I think once I saw the offer in front of me, I think it becomes a lot harder to turn it down than it is to like talk about it in essence. Just from a regular live perspective. Now, like talking about this deal, I totally agree with you. Like it just seems like theater. Like it seems like it just seems so manipulated and planned out to me. It seems like they had been having these, like Jay Monahan to me just seems like very two-faced. Like he's giving the players and all of this, just like, he's just feeding them a line. And then behind the scenes, he's clearly been having these conversations while publicly saying a totally different thing. My theory is exactly what you were saying. Like, this wasn't supposed to be leaked yet. Some tabloid or news reporter, somebody got a hold of it who wasn't supposed to have a hold of it and was going to break the story. And so they had to break the story first to do damage control.
Yeah.
That just seems like what happened.
I agree with that. And I think that it probably has, the whole situation probably has more to do with what that original lawsuit was, because the agreement to have an agreement nullified that original lawsuit. And I read something where there is a lot of information on both sides that they didn't need or want that information released to the public. So they squashed that lawsuit for those reasons.
Right. And I can't imagine all of the secrets that go into something like dealing with a foreign government that's known for human rights violation. You have to, like, you know, even just like know or be aware of or talk about when something like that happens. I also think, and this is just my take on it, I think Monahan is completely in it just for himself, because now he has this deal. He basically just has like a golden parachute. He can piss off everybody every tour player, and they're going to pay him a bundle to be this new CEO or chairman or whatever his new thing is. And he can get voted out and now just gets to go retire again with like generational set wealth. Like he's just going to, he's going to make these moves. He's going to be the benefactor of it. And then he's going to leave the mess for somebody else to clean up. Like, that's just my theory on it. You know, he has like this medical condition that he has to step away from. Who knows how true or false that is. He could have just been under a huge amount of stress, and maybe he is just like, maybe he is a completely honest guy who was just dealt a very crazy hand and didn't know what to do with it. But I have a hard time believing he doesn't walk out of this with the most gained and then leaving everybody else to kind of be like, well, now it's your guys' mess. Like, I don't care because I got my piece of the pie.
Well, him and Piff, they'll gain the most because now Piff has a seat at the table.
Right.
So we'll see what happens.
Which is just what they needed was more money and influence. But it's disappointing from a perspective of like, you paraded like Rory out there and had him say all these things, and that poor guy like seemed to take the brunt of everything, and now it just seems like all for naught. Like it was all just like this political or, you know, entertainment theater that we were all just kind of like given, and it really meant zero. So I'm not a Liv fan. I mean, like, set the like moral thing of it aside, it's just not it's not an entertaining product. Like, I've tried watching it. I kind of got into the first couple tournaments, but then I just kind of like lost interest. Like, it was hard to get excited for it. The team aspect just like didn't work. It doesn't work how they're doing it. I think it'd be much better if we could, like, if you were watching team golf, like when we watch the Ryder Cup or we watch all these other team events, like it gets exciting. And so I think if they would lead with that and or somehow have that more incorporated into it, you know, it would be a lot more interesting to me to watch, because there are some big names. You know, like, there are some great golfers playing over there, like Dustin Johnson, Cam Smith are fun golfers to watch. So there's some good golfers.
I mean, I think Brooks won the LIV tournament, the tournament before the PGA. Like, he won that the week before going into the PGA. So, I mean, he's playing good golf over there. And there's, I don't know what his competition was like that week that he won, but definitely good players over there. So I've also tried to watch. I find it kind of the shotgun thing weird. Like, they're all on their 14th hole. And that's usually like when I'll turn it on, when there's like three or four holes left and I can kind of just see like how it ends. But I've only done that two, maybe three times, because I also find it not interesting.
Yeah. And I think it almost just kind of seems like, it almost just seems like a wealthier Champions Tour, or like a feeder, you know. It's almost, in a way, it just seems like an old timers league, you know, like,
there's a lot of those,
and Brandon Grace are going to win tournaments. It just doesn't, again, it's like I don't want Brandon Grace winning a tournament doesn't interest me. Like, I'm not going to watch that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch Charles Howell win a golf tournament. And then if Brooks or just Dustin Johnson or Cam Smith does win one, like, I don't know, the competition, like, it wasn't like all of those dudes charging after him to kind of, like, there wasn't the Rorys or the John Rahms or the Scottie Schefflers chasing him down. There's only maybe one other guy or two other guys, and you're just kind of like, I mean, I kind of think you should win that.
So,
I don't know. I mean, like, I haven't watched one since. I won't probably watch it unless, you know, like, unless there's a vast, crazy difference to it, or there's like a LIV versus PGA Tour like mashup. I mean, you know, all of these guys are going to end back up on the PGA Tour who can still compete. if it ends up that, it, you know, if that does end up that Livs goes away. But now that they can all play in the majors, like, they don't have, why would they go play in the John Deere Classic or the 3M? Like, they don't care. Like, I would, you know, yeah. I'm already making $200 million and I can still compete. Like, Cam Smith, you know, Brooks, all these guys have already proven they can still compete. I mean, even look at the Masters, wasn't it like three of the top five guys or three of the top six guys were Liv guys? Same thing with the PGA. Yeah. So it's just like, they, I mean, they can prove they can compete. So they have no, they have, there's nothing keeping them at the PGA Tour right now, even with the PGA making all of these like massive purses or FedEx. Like, why put yourself through the stress if I can make $150 million and then, like, whatever. I mean, like, look at Pat Perez. That dude's made more money than his whole career earnings, and he, like, comes in last place every tournament. Like, how do you, I mean, that's...
He does, but his team, the other three guys, win the tournament for him.
I know. So he just goes out and shoots champagne, wins $8 million, and hasn't had to do much of anything. Like, I don't know. Hard to turn that down. Get to party on a private jet. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
It is a cluster. Life. It's 100% a cluster, and it'll be so interesting. Like you said, I don't I don't care. I've lost interest in the whole drama of it until there's something like we have something solid. Like, what is actually going to happen?
Yeah.
Like, what is actually going to exist? What's not? Who's going to be playing where? Who's not? So once I think some of those like really tangible decisions get made, this gets really interesting again, but I don't see it going. I don't see any more big names like jumping over to Liv. So if anything, Liv shuts down and all of these guys come back. I can't imagine, you know, these guys now jump ship and be like, well, I mean, I'm sure they're regretting it, but I don't see John Rahm now going over or Rory going over or Scottie Scheffler going over.
Yeah.
But if I was them, I'd be pissed because I could have made $400 million and now can just come on back to all of the big things. So,
yeah, it'll be so interesting to see how that plays out and how the old or the Liv guys actually, if they can come back to the PGA Tour, what that looks like. Monahan said it's not just going to be like they're like automatically back on. They have to meet all the criteria and re-qualify or whatever. Whatever the situation is going to be, well, yeah, who the heck knows?
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, when push comes to shove, it's hard to turn down the PGA champion. Like, you're going to say no to the guy who won the tournament. You're going to say no to Dustin Johnson or any of these guys. Like, I just don't. Like, you're going to tell me Cam Smith. They're going to say no to Cam Smith. Dude, like, I mean, I just don't see that happening. Like, I have a really hard time believing Cam Smith comes back and says, I want to play in the PGA Tour. Everybody wants me here. The fans want me here, and they're going to tell him no. Like, I don't know. Monahan seems at least cunning enough to me to be like, well, I need to put the best product out there, and having Brooks and DJ and Cam Smith does that versus, you know, some other guys versus a Brian Harman or a Wyndham Clark or a, you know, like a Keegan Bradley or, I mean, these guys that we all know and are great, but like, nobody gets excited for them. But if Brooks is in there, Cam Smith is in there, those guys are going to, like, you know, they're going to tick up some numbers. Guys are going to stick around for them.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Anyways. All right. Well, we went way past time, but this was so much fun. Dude, thank you so much for coming on and being here. I'm so glad I didn't have to do this by myself. It's much more enjoyable when there's somebody else here, at least, and especially somebody that I know. So people can find you on Instagram at the golf expert, right? At the dot golf dot expert.
That's right. Yep.
Perfect. Anything else? Anywhere else? If there's anybody listening in Minnesota, do you like live club fittings or club work or something like that? Can you just tell everybody where that is and then that'll be done. I just want people to know if they want to find you.
Yeah. So for my Minnesota golfers, you can just hit me up on Instagram. That's usually the best way to do it. And I do local fittings. I do club repair, regripping, extensions, reshafting, whatever you need. So pretty much anything golf I can do. If you just have any questions at all, Ryan and I are always obviously super happy to help out. So I appreciate you having me on. This was awesome.
Yeah, man. I hope that you're wanting to come back. We'll see how the experience went. I hope you liked it because I'd love to have you back. But definitely. Yeah. And if you're listening, thank you guys so much. Season 2, hopefully we're going to get back on a regular posting schedule now. So expect more from us. Again, you can always hit up Brady or me or PJR on Instagram. I mean, I'm on TikTok, YouTube, all of that fun stuff. Or, I mean, our curated links are everywhere too. So let us know. Thank you guys so much. Hope you enjoyed, and we'll be back next week. See ya.